Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 228 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we are going to give you our reactions for the Harry Potter 20th reunion that was on HBO Max. We just got finished watching it. It was an emotional roller coaster. But I laughed a lot more than I thought I was going to. So,
yeah.
I'm ready to talk.
I cried, so that's good.
Yeah.
I didn't cry.
Neither did I.
It's because you two have no feelings. Unemotional.
No.
It was basically whenever other people on screen would get teary-eyed emotional.
That's when it would get to me a little bit.
I would get teary-eyed emotional.
Yeah. I think I cried the most.
I very silently cried. So I don't know. We could have been even, but I just wasn't showing it.
Meg would just like look over at me and her eyes is just like,
I know, I was
tears.
Like, I'm blinking them away.
Oh my God. Well, do you want me to read some social media before we dive in?
Sure.
It's right in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm going to mix it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So make sure you follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends. They might like us as well. You never know. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Swish Flick Cast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, we are doing this lovely reaction for everyone today. Head on over to patreon.com/swishflickcast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going. And you get awesome extra stuff like exclusive Felix Files episodes, our Discord channel, live recordings, trivia games, Swish swag boxes, and more. Thank you so much to everyone for your support, and we appreciate you so much. We are always accepting Potter stories. Any kind of fun stuff, questions, concerns, send them to our email, swishflickcast@gmail.com.
You did so well.
And that is that.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been doing this for a little while now. I don't know if you know. All right. I think that maybe we give three reaction words. So three single words for our reaction. Three.
Ayo.
To the reunion. You can think about it.
I have two. I need one more.
Okay.
I think that I would go with nostalgic, emotional, and heartwarming. That's how it made me feel the whole time I was watching it.
Yeah. So I think mine, emotional, memories, and laughs. I laughed a lot.
Yeah.
I know I said that earlier, but I laughed a lot more than I thought I was going to laugh.
I also thought heartwarming, so I thought fun, heartwarming, and sweet.
It was sweet.
What say you, Daddy?
I don't know. I would also say laughs. It was cool to see them all again.
Laughs, cool.
Memories. I don't know.
Memories. That's good.
Memories.
I think I laughed the most at Tom Felton.
Yeah. Same.
He was a bigger part of it than I thought he was going to be, and I liked that.
I feel like he's never left that, though.
No.
I feel like he and Jason Isaacs, with their relationship where they call each other, like, father and son all the time ever since. Like, I just feel like he's always been in that mode, and he interacts with the Potter community, like, out of, like, the more of the main characters of the movies, like, he does it the most, I feel like.
He loves it. Like, he he kind of makes me think of how Ivana Lynch was while filming the films, like, just so in it. And I'm not saying she's not in it anymore, but, like, yeah, he's just, like, continued to do it after. And, like, just, like, he's actually a Gryffindor, but, like, he'll embrace. I think he has, like, as much Slytherin merch as he should Gryffindor merch. I just love how much he embraces it and loves it, just like we do.
It just, like, hearing them talk about it, just, like, I guess I'm him too, but, like, him, Matthew Lewis, Alfie Enoch, the trio, hearing them talk about it in the sense of, like, how it was their childhood and how experiences that maybe we had in grade school, middle school, high school, or what they were experiencing on this film set.
What did he say? It was just in Defense Against the Dark Arts class.
Right.
Yeah. Like, instead of being in school.
Right. Yeah, it was the same thing. And, like, they've I feel as if we've never heard them really talk about it in that way. Because I am definitely somebody who has deep dived on YouTube many a times and just watched as much behind the scenes things as I possibly could. Even, like, back in high school, I was just all about finding every single Rupert Grint interview, every single Emma Watson interview. Like, I would just go all out and try to watch all of them, every single TV station they were ever on. Like, back in the day then, it was more so like, oh, they're going to be on a TV show instead of like
press stuff.
I'll catch it on YouTube later.
So, like, that was how I was growing up. So to hear them talk about it in a way that I've actually never heard them talk about it was really refreshing and surprising, because a lot of the times whenever they decide to do things like this, it never feels like new information. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, they're going to talk about the same things they've always talked about. And, like, sure, it'll be nostalgic to, like, see them now. But they actually talked about things that I'd never heard them talk about before. And, like, hearing Emma, she didn't really go into as much detail maybe as I personally would have liked to pry about why she didn't come back. The fact that she actually, like, talked about that was really, really, really cool. I don't know. It was just that kind of stuff that made me really happy with this in general.
Yeah.
I think I did enjoy that, because mainly, so there's, like, this, and I'm sure we'll both talk about this more, but there's this really, really, really big documentary that originally they had released in pieces on the Ultimate Editions, which at the time were, like, this new release on...
It was when Blu-rays were brand new. Yeah, like, and it was the first time they were being released on Blu-ray.
Right, so it was, like, it looked like, on your shelf, it looked like a set of books, and it was really pretty, and it would come with, like, things in it, like, film cells, like, I don't know, that kind of stuff. But at the end, or part of that, and each one was, like, okay, this is the making of Harry Potter.
And it was, like, each one was, like, an hour to an hour and a half long. Like, like, they were legit, and it was 8 parts, so I was just...
And one would be, like, focused on music. One would be focused on creatures. One would be focused on growing up. So that's where we've seen a lot of stuff from. But I feel like a lot of that focused on the trio more so. So that's why I like seeing, you know, Matthew, Tom. Alfie, Tommy, or, yeah, and Tom. But I also...
You called him Tommy.
I thought you said Tommy.
No, sorry.
I was like, yeah, Tommy.
Tommy's mammy.
I really liked seeing the adults... quote adults, because they're all adults now, but the adult Potter actors. It was really cool to, like, hear Robbie Coltrane say, like,
so emotional.
He was the best in
this. He was
saying, hey, at this point in time, I'd been acting 35 years and still walking out to the set was overwhelming. And, like,
and to put it into perspective that, like, he was overwhelmed, so he couldn't even imagine how the kids felt. And this was the first time they ever did anything like this. And he felt overwhelmed as a seasoned actor who was in big motion pictures. I mean, he was in James Bond, like, big films.
Yeah. And then Gary Oldman talking about how it was a family and how Potter made it that way because you came back, unlike other films. I mean, how many other films have 8 parts to them? Where literally these kids grow up over a decade, and these adult
Fast
actors
and the Furious
see them also.
I bet it's similar to, like, Marvel.
It's just you really, know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They seem like they're pretty tight-knit as well, so that completely makes sense.
Because what he was saying is, like, you don't normally have enough time on a set to grow those kinds of relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's just something special that, like, we all share in our way as fans, and they all get to share in their own way because they were a part of it in a way that we'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting.
I loved hearing about, like, the Weasley kids being, like, an actual family, and how, like, Julie Walters never, like, kind of went out of character. She was always, like, the mom type. Yes. But I loved the story of the twins when Ron in Goblet has to dance with McGonagall, and they told him that they had been practicing the steps for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And there were no steps to it, and so they, like, freaked him out. I just thought that that was fantastic. Like, I bet there's more pranks that they, like, played on each other the whole time. But that was one of the ones that stood out for me. I was like, that is so, like, Sarah, you would do that to me. You would be like, well, have you been practicing? Like, do you know,
absolutely.
Do you know the steps? And absolutely. I would believe you, and I would fall for it. I'd be like, no, I don't know. Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, I will say that even watching that, like, we watched that whole bit of documentary leading up to this because we're like, oh, will there be new footage? And they did use a lot of that footage, but it wasn't just, like, a redoing of that. I didn't feel
that's
that.
What I was
it still
worried
felt
about.
New.
Yeah.
And there was some new stuff. And then you have all of these interviews between the cast that you've never seen these cast members interact in an interview like that before. And it brought, like, this whole new level to it. Like, just seeing them, like, compliment each other and, like, talk about how they were, like, learning as actors. And they would look at each other and go, hey, that's acting. That's cool.
Like, that's really cool.
Yeah. Oh, it was cute.
Aww. I love how Robbie Coltrane said his favorite moments were with the trio and him in Hagrid's hut. I liked that because that feels authentic for us being movie watchers and book readers, because that's when I felt that everybody was the most tight knit is when, you know, Hagrid was maybe spilling a secret or giving out more information for them to slowly, like, piece together puzzles and figure it out and moving every plot along. Or, like, for example, when Hermione's called a mudblood for the first time, and that was her first big opportunity to do some real acting, I think is what Emma said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's got the tears in her eyes, and he gives her, like, the pep talk. And I don't know. I just thought that was really special because it felt special for me, too, right. as a, you know, content consumer.
Can we talk about Robbie Coltrane's little lip quiver?
Oh my God.
Stop.
When he's sitting beside Emma, you can see a tear is down his face. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't. But, like, there's so many good parts. And I feel like there's so much that I'm not remembering already. So
I
feel
really
like it's definitely.
Yeah.
It's something I've got to watch again for sure. It's just. So sweet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of missing people that I would like to have seen.
That, like, I'm so glad they did. And I don't know why I was, like, I didn't think about that part being in there, like, in Loving Memory. And I'm so glad they did that.
Yeah.
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 I know.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as soon as that started, I was like, oh, no.
Here we go.
I could watch a whole special on, you know, the people who have passed. Like, if you pull, like, their behind the scenes footage and have the cast talk about just the people who are no longer with us, like, I would love to see that. Like, I would love to hear more stories about Alan Rickman being Alan Rickman and then switching to Snape, just like how Tom Felton talked about Jason Isaacs playing Lucius and how it was a Jekyll and Hyde situation, because one second Jason Isaacs is being, like, so incredibly kind and, like, you know, like, a mentor to Tom, and then switching to Lucius Malfoy and slapping his hand with his, you know, the end of his wand, pretty much, with his walking stick, and that there were fangs on it and it dug into Tom's hand. Then he has to switch back to Jason Isaacs and apologize for, you know, actually hurting him.
Yeah.
It'll be good for the scene.
It made me think of that scene with Hair or with Dan where he like grabs him by the neck and it's like, ooh, sorry, like,
oh, you're right. Yes. Yeah. Well, when he's talking, when Jason Isaacs is talking about the end of Chamber of Secrets and he kicks and then he hits with his cane and they were going to reshoot that because they thought he slipped. He's like, no, I kicked Abby down the stairs. I'm like, this is brilliant. This is brilliant.
So good.
It's just so great. I love how, like, I just admire actors and actresses and the way that they can really hone in on their craft and really bring these characters that we absolutely like know and love or hate from these pages and just bring them to life. And I can't imagine anybody else being Lucius Malfoy. Like, that's Jason Isaacs, and they do it so incredibly well. And like, can you imagine anybody else being Hagrid? You know what I mean? Like, they did such an amazing job bringing these characters to life for us, because we're a judgmental crew. As much as the Harry Potter community is very open and accepting and warm, we want things done with fidelity, and we want things to feel how they felt for us in the books. And in large part, I feel like the movie series as a whole was very successful. Now I can pick some out that I said, you didn't meet my expectations, but that's a whole nother ball game. And I'm trying to separate craft from craft, writing from film. But if we go back and we just dial in on Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets and Chris Columbus and what he did and how the kids said that they felt so comfortable and that the environment was warm and that they were learning and Chris Columbus was patient and kind, like, that's what I wanted for the movies. And that's what we got.
I love Chris Columbus so much. I think because I've like inundated myself with this behind the scenes thing and now watching this and hearing so much of Chris Columbus talk about his passion for these movies, I guess I just never, kind of like what I think Dan said it, like, he never got enough credit for everything he did, because realistically, he set these films up for success with the casting. He set these films up for success with getting Stuart Craig to be able to design, getting John Williams to come in and do the music. Like, so much of that is attributed to Chris Columbus's success in these first two films. And like, I was so sad watching that 8-part documentary and like hearing about how he had decided that he wasn't going to come back for the third one, and how when he signed on to do Sorcerer's Stone, he full well intended to do all of the films. And that kind of surprised me, because I guess I just never thought that he had wanted to do all of them, because he didn't, you know? So like, right. To me, I was just like, well, maybe he was just taking it film by film, but when he signed on to do the first one, he fully intended to finish it out and just got so mentally and physically exhausted because, I mean, he was training all of these kids to learn how to act, basically. And like, it was the first and second films were back to back filming because they were trying to keep up with
beat the clock,
the kids growing.
Yeah.
So like, it was, there was just no rest for him, and he had a family, and it makes me sad that he didn't finish them, but also I understand why he didn't finish them. And like, I like what Alfonso here. I liked hearing Alfonso talk about the film in this special, because I think for a long time I didn't really appreciate what Alfonso did for the films, because the third is good in its own right, but also not, if you are comparing craft to craft, like we tend to do sometimes. But like, hearing him talk about his visions and how he was treating the kids more like adults and giving them more say in their role. It made me appreciate really what he taught them to be able to like complete the movies. Like imagine, I'm not saying that Chris couldn't have pushed them. I'm sure that he would have because he works with kids and adults, but like it made me appreciate him. And then also Mike Newell, and I like David Yates, but he just is a little bit too heavy-handed with the scissors. But
the editing shears.
The one thing, watching the special, hearing David Yates say, "I just thought, you know, like Harry would like grab onto Voldemort." I was like, "No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't grab onto Voldemort in the seventh one, and fight him." That's just
his dialogue during that scene, as well as.
Yeah, I still just cannot get on board.
As a lover of Seven, it's cringy for me.
It is very cringy, and I try not to be that way about them.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that
I'm not going to crap all over him. I'm not going to do that.
No, but that scene, I just cannot ever. The battle, I just can't get on board. A lot of the battle's good. I keep going back and forth. But like, honestly,
it has a lot of really great moments.
It does.
And it has a lot of really questionable moments, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, if we go back to talking about like how one and two, we've talked about this before on the pod, the aesthetics of one and two are warm tones. Like if you think about the reds and the softs of like Gryffindor Tower, and the grass is really green, and it's bright and airy, and it just feels comfortable. And then you switch to three, and I liked hearing him say, Alfonso Cuarón say that, I mean, I knew it was on purpose, but it's nice to hear that what we picked up on is what was intended. The tone of the movie changes, and so does the aesthetic. So, like, if you look at three, it's all bluish and green tones and cooler tones, and it's darker, and rightfully so. And he talks about how Harry has like this cloud over him because Sirius Black is out to kill him, right? Mass murder on the loose, and how things just kind of shift. And I liked that. And as a movie watcher, like I picked up on that, and I could feel that. So I appreciated that a lot. Didn't appreciate the layout change, but that's a whole different story.
I'm like iffy about the layout change, because I think that Stuart Craig, they were under time constraints really with the first two, I think. And I feel like he didn't get it to what he wanted. So then he just like took the opportunity as the movies went on to expand and better Hogwarts. And like, it's awkward going through the transition, but I like what it turns out as in the end. You know what I mean? So it's like the growing pains of getting there. Because like I love – the thing is like the first two films, they did a lot more on – they did a lot more on location shooting. Like they went to Annick. They went to Oxford. They went to all of these beautiful cathedrals and places all over England and Scotland. And then they like started to tone that down as the movies went on because it's expensive, and which makes no sense because like they're getting more money as the movies go on. Like, why couldn't you still continue to do on location? But they had all the space at Leavesden to build what they needed to build, and the technology was getting better as the movies went on. So they could, you know, just send out maybe like a second crew and go film some things in the Highlands and not have to send the actors there, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it made it. The ending of what Hogwarts became made the growing pains worth it, in my opinion, even though it was like awkward as we were going.
I agree.
That was a long-winded answer, but you know, that's how I am. So
makes for good podcast.
Emily in the chat said, "I wonder why they didn't talk about any of the props, like Mina Lima," and asked me and you, Meg, as graphic designers, how did them not talking about that make me feel? I will say, would have been super cool. However, this was more like focused on the cast and that kind of a reunion as opposed to the whole behind the scenes effect. Like, it wasn't the inner workings of how they made it. It's been 20 years. We haven't seen everybody in such a long time. So like, I'm okay with it because that didn't seem like that was the focus.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more in Potter that you can talk about.
It's almost like that needs to be a whole different thing.
Yeah, like that is a special in and of itself.
Yeah.
So I feel like if they would have included it, they wouldn't have given it the time that it deserves anyway.
It would have felt out of place.
Yeah.
In this specific example.
Yeah, totally.
It would have been cool to see Mina Lima in it. But I just think it doesn't.
Yeah.
It would have been cool for them to talk about their story. But they just don't have the relationships that, like, the cast necessarily does. Like, I know that they were there and they never intended to be on this 10-year project or whatever. So it would have been cool to, like, hear them talk about that. But this was more so about the relationships and the growth of the familiar faces. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, literally the cast.
Yeah. And the directors. I loved how much screen time the directors got in this. I liked that.
Yeah.
Because it was like talking about how the kids were growing and it was their viewpoint of the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're people we don't get to hear from often. So it was cool. I loved the part whenever the Weasleys were in the burrow and Chris Columbus like came in.
Yeah, they didn't even know he was going to be there.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was sweet. They didn't talk about Shoelace.
They didn't. I can imagine thinking about that though, and how Bonnie and Dan are 3 years different. Now, when we're this age, that's not a lot. But when they were doing that, that's a lot of an age difference. And I can imagine that felt awkward AF for Dan.
Yeah.
To have to kiss her. And I didn't necessarily think about that until now. Because, like, I mean, 30 to 33 is whatever. But, like, 13 to 16 is like, ugh.
Right.
Totally.
God.
They didn't talk about the Emma Dan kiss at all.
I know. And I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that because they hyped up and talked so much about Rupert and Emma. And I was waiting for Dan and Emma because that one, like I think I said this on the live, that one was way more intense. And wasn't Rupert there for that? Wasn't he giving them like garbage for that? I thought that I had heard that somewhere.
Sometimes,
I can imagine him having to get kicked off the set for that, though.
Yeah. I think that sometimes they don't allow. I wonder, especially because, like, Emma had to be topless for that scene. So maybe he wouldn't have been allowed to be there.
I don't know.
Was she actually topless or was she wearing, like, a strapless
like
something?
Like a thing, and they could just.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it probably was, like, to look topless, but still, like, uncomfortable for her, you know? Probably.
Yeah. Like, here, I'm going to paint you silver, and then I want you to neck on each other.
Oh, yeah, and they're like, and we were painted.
Oh, gosh, that reminds me of when Helena Bonham Carter and Dan are going down the steps at Gringotts, and she yells back up, "We're snogging down here."
I liked when they first went in there, and Dan's like, "It's so nice of you to let us do this at your house."
Your house, yeah.
Like, they're genuinely, from what we see, they seem to be genuinely very pleasant people.
Yeah.
Who I enjoy hearing from. And I love seeing their reactions to each other. Like, when else are you going to see Daniel and Helena Bonham Carter? You can't say her name just as one. Interact.
Mm-hmm. Like, I liked how he said HBC.
HBC.
Like, I'm going to call her that from now on.
I loved the little signature that he had given her.
Oh,
and she
God.
Made him
oh, my God.
Out. That was great.
I would have liked to have known who dated each other.
When yeah.
We were like, people like kiss or whatever. People broke, like got together and like then broke up. Who?
Who was really snogging at Hogwarts?
Yeah, yeah right.
That was a whole thing.
I feel like Tom and Emma just need to happen. You know what I always wonder though is like actors, like child actors who are like in situations like they were, I feel like it would be really difficult to be. It's like a two-sided, it's like a double-ended sword. Is that the right phrase? Because
double-edged
sword. Because
a double-ended sword would be very painful to hold.
Yeah. Because I feel like part of it is you grew up together, so like you might have that sibling type relationship, but also at the end of the day, like that type of situation that you were in, like how can you find somebody who relates to you on the same level besides the people who did it with you? So it's almost like, do you have a relationship with someone who you did that with? You know what I mean? To like be able to get each other. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like Emma has a crush, about. If I'm being honest. Did you see her face?
I mean, who wouldn't?
I mean, I would.
Ooh. He's cute.
He's cute.
So is she.
She's hot.
But also, reminder, you can be just friends with the opposite sex.
I loved
and
that.
It's all good.
I loved how that was clearly shown between her and Rupert.
That was hilarious.
Oh my God, him saying, I love you. And then there's a pause. Just friends.
Because that was him totally cutting, not the tension, but like the emotion, because they were both like crying.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have to make a joke, basically, is probably what he was thinking.
Right. That's why he is literally you. And if he is you,
then you are
and
Ron.
And he is literally Ron, then you are actually Ron Weasley.
Yeah.
And I think you're okay with it. Because Ron's great.
I would love to be married to someone and let me stay home. I'll be the Ron in that situation. You go work.
I was like, wait a minute.
You be Hermione. Yeah. I got a good looking spouse.
Part-time hang out at the joke shop.
Yeah.
That would be perfect.
Dreams.
You know, have any other standout moments?
The one scene that surprised me, and I guess I've never thought about, was closer to the end when it was the trio and they were talking about how they like lost themselves towards the end.
I can
see it and understand based on how they were talking about it, but it was like clearly something that you wouldn't think about.
Yeah.
I also did not realize, Meg said she had read about this, but I didn't realize that Emma almost walked away in, what, at 5?
Yeah, after, yeah, before 5.
And while we were watching this, we were discussing in the chat with some other Swishers, and it's just so important to really get rid of this whole sexualizing female.
I do think that was a big part of it.
Actors and musicians and just females in the public eye, like, or anybody really, but that's just where you see it in the media. And like, I do not blame her for wanting to be like, you know what? Yeah. I don't want to be a part of this. Not because I don't love the work I'm doing or who I'm doing it with, but like, I don't want people to talk about me like that. I'm a teenager. I mean, you shouldn't do it to anybody, but especially...
Yeah. Somebody in the chat said that there was a countdown online until Emma Watson was 18.
That's gross.
Yeah, that's.
It happens still now with stars that are underage. It's disgusting.
It's not okay.
And I think too is like it's so overwhelming though for them. I'm sure for all of those years, all of a sudden, like all of these people know them and they can't go anywhere, and that's exhausting. You know, always having people like hound them and. Especially when you're in something so big and people like ship you with people and they're like, what's going to happen? Tell me what's going to happen in the books. Or like, why aren't you dating this person? Or like, what are they really like? Tell us. And they almost think like they themselves are the characters anyways. And it's not easy, you know? And I think people forget that.
I think that, what was I going to say? Oh, I was going to say, I wonder if Emma kind of realized maybe why she came back is because she realized that, like, the damage was already done. So, like, stepping away wasn't going to stop that kind of stuff. So why hold herself back from finishing a project she clearly loves? I mean, I don't know. She didn't talk about it. This is obviously just me theorizing. But, like, I wonder if that's what made her just decide to keep on keeping on, because she's like, well, it's... Me stepping away is not going to stop people from saying these things, you know? So, like, why take something away from myself that I enjoy doing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wonder how they got out of that, like, who am I thing, because they all said that they'd experienced it. Like, you've been
therapy.
Playing this.
I hope they chopped her hair off and changed how she looked completely, like probably just to really get away from Hermione.
Yeah.
I mean, they've taken roles that are far away from their characters too, you know?
Yeah. Was Dan's first thing that he did was that play.
Oh,
well, I think he was still in Harry Potter when he did that.
And he was completely nude.
Yeah.
True. And then Emma just became Belle, which is clearly Hermione again.
Correct.
Yeah, but she had just roles Disney. In between that. And she went off and she went to college and...
Yeah.
You know,
Rupert bought a ice cream truck or whatever.
I really enjoyed... I can't remember the exact quote in the beginning, but it was about time, and I really liked that. And then I like how the trio gets together, and Rupert's like, yeah, a lot of time has passed. Like, I've had kidney stones and a baby.
Yeah.
I don't remember hearing the kidney stones thing.
Well, I didn't hear him say it because someone was talking, so I didn't hear, but I saw kidney stones. I was like, what is he saying? I'm like, I'm pretty sure he just said something about having a kid too. I'm like, that's funny.
Yeah. Her name is Wednesday. So cute. I don't know.
It was a good time. I'm excited to watch it again.
Yeah. I want to watch it again, no offense, without you guys in my ears. No headphones on. Just focused in on it.
Yeah.
Relaxed.
I mean, we've watched that other 8-part documentary a couple times. So it's just we just love watching this. Because I swear every time I watch that, I still see something new or something different stands out to me.
If you loved this, it's on YouTube. Go and watch it. Yeah. It is the best 8 hours ever of just Harry Potter nostalgia and awesome behind the scenes footage. I freaking love it. I forgot how much I loved it until we watched it again. I was like, it makes you so excited to just go back and watch the films again. And this special made me remember when I was the kid who was just, because I mean, you guys know who I am. When I want something, when I love something, I love it hard. I go all in. It's who I am. That's mm-hmm. how I am. Mm-hmm. That's clearly how I was with Harry Potter when I was a kid too. Like nothing's changed. Megan is Megan. That's how I am. So when I loved Harry Potter, I freaking loved Harry Potter. My mom and dad would buy me those magazines that would come out that would just be about Harry Potter, and I would just pour through them. I would ask to get two copies so I could cut one up and I could keep one whole, and I would paste every tiny little picture of all of their faces on my wall. I'd cut out the pictures. I had a whole shrine in my room. There were people who had the Backstreet Boys. No, I had Rupert, Emma, and Dan on my walls, just totally obsessed. And that feeling of just being so immersed in something, so in love with something, it just has this certain nostalgic feel in my core that this kind of stuff lights again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And totally. It just, that is more so what makes me emotional, is that feeling over the words that any of them were saying. Not that that wasn't emotional and beautiful, but like whenever Robbie said the whole line of in 50 years we'll be watching Harry Potter, I won't be here but Hagrid will be. And then I think to Megan in her room with all those magazines, and how I hope that I can pass that on to my friend's kids, or if I decide to have a kid, or I feel like it's a generational thing that's just going to keep getting passed down. And it already has, mm-hmm. Tom was talking about, he's met kids who weren't even alive whenever he was filming it, which is crazy.
Well, and we have the kids that listen to this podcast, you know, writing to us and talking to us, and you have the kids that you see at Universal that are, you know, doing magic and flipping out, and
so
they're
cute.
You know, getting immersed in the world. And then you have Alana, who was building Harry Potter Legos with me, and she's watching the first movie all the way through. The end is a little too much. But, like, and she picks up Draco Malfoy and tells me that she doesn't like him. And I'm like, he's just misunderstood. He's just misunderstood. He turns out he's getting better. But, like, you know, it's I want to pass that to her, not only because I love it, but because it's wholesome and the lessons that we learn from it are good and pure. And it's just, I've learned so much and connected with people so much through Potter. Like, that's something I want for her. It could be through Potter. It could be maybe she does it through Disney stuff or Star Wars or whatever. Just find something to love like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that teaches like you home. Teaches you good. Yeah. It's cozy. Potter's cozy. Mm-hmm. And it always has been, and I think it always will be for us Potterheads and Swishers.
Yeah.
I agree.
And you know, I've gotta be 100% honest. I truly don't even think that any of the parts that they put in this special with the author were even needed. Like, they didn't have to include any of that. And this special would have been amazingly beautiful without
it. I do want to clear up a misconception, though, from the internet, because a lot of people are saying that the author wasn't reached out to and invited. The author was reached out to and invited, and her team and her decided that footage from 2019 would suffice. So she was invited.
I read an article that they didn't say if she, like, what her response was.
The Twitter, I believe it was on her Twitter, that said that the team and her decided that it would suffice from previous recordings. It didn't take away and it didn't do anything for me. I'll say that. I was indifferent. But I did enjoy at the very beginning and a little bit sparse throughout seeing the book releases.
Yeah.
That was cool because that brought back a lot of that really was nostalgic. Memories.
Those were some good times.
I mean, reading was at the time people were talking about how reading was dead, and this for an entire generation of kids and adults got into the series too.
Yeah.
It amped it up for us. And I think that if you look through Bookstagram, you're going to find a lot of millennials there. And a lot of those people have probably read Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And this is a series that may have jump-started people's love for reading. I know that it did with me. And as a teacher now, like, I'm excited that if I'm still in the classroom and a new series comes out and takes over schools all across the world, like Potter did for us, like, that's going to be a great time. And I would for sure read those books. And, you know, I can remember one of my English teachers with Chamber of Secrets is the book that we did a study on in her class. Like, if I taught older kids, which, you know, first graders, if a series comes out, it's probably not going to be for them. But I would totally give in and go all in to that and read it and bring it in your classroom and get hyped with them. And it's just something that we need to foster. Parents need to foster it. Aunts and uncles need to foster it. Friends of the family need to everybody foster that love of reading, because it's something that lasts an entire lifetime.
Don't do it. She's just lying to you all.
I gotta tell you, Sarah has lied about all her book purchases ever. And the books that you see are not hers.
I'd have one book and I just Photoshop different covers on it.
She catfishes everybody. She steals people's books, pictures from the internet. She's gotten really good with cut and paste.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Anything else, or? I'm
trying to think. That,
I think that's pretty Good. I think we all got a good little boost of nostalgia there.
I think it was just nice. Really well done. Yeah. I think it was well done.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I wanted more. I always want more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll watch it again.
It was a good length. I was worried it was going to be like...
an hour.
I was worried it was going to be even less than that. So like, yeah, it was a good length.
I agree.
And it didn't feel like too much. But yeah, I mean, I always want more, so.
Definitely. Okay. Well.
Should this be for Nargles and nostalgia?
I could do that. I could do that. If you want to follow your hosts on social media, Megan and Katie are on Instagram at the Petrus Family. I, Tiffany, am on Instagram at tiffswish_flick. And Sarah's on Instagram at O'Malley with 3 H's. Oh, well, kids, like Katie said, for Nargles and nostalgia.
I like it.
And that that concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And don't let the Muggles get you down.
Amazing! Just like my voice!